supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we have an especially important question of the week for you this time around, cats and kittens. It's about what you can do to prevent the loss of the great migration of monarch butterflies, which is currently severely threatened. There's a couple of plants you can install in your landscape that can help these flying beauties out. We'll tell you all about them after we take a heapin' helpin' of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Mike, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you?
Hey, doing well here. We planted an asparagus garden last year, and we put the crowns into the ground. And I know you're supposed to let it grow for 3 years before you harvest it. And I had read somewhere online where the crowns were already 1 year old. So that would have meant when they bloomed last year, that was their second year. Is coming into this spring, is this going to be my third year? Am I going to be able to harvest them?
Have you always been this hopeful, Mike, or is this a recent trend in life? No, officer, I wasn't speeding. I had accidentally hit the thing that showed kilometers instead of miles per hour on my car. Where are you, man?
I'm in Brownsburg, Indiana.
Okay, and what did you put these crowns in the spring?
We did, yes.
And then you got shoots coming up out of the ground?
Yes.
And you didn't molest any of the shoots?
We did not.
And you allowed them to make their solar ray-catching fronds?
Yes.
And have you cut them back at all, or are they still, like, standing, staggering, falling over?
No, I cut them down probably late November.
Okay. In the future, you might want to wait a little longer till we're definitely into the hard freeze, into the dormant period. And then did you mulch the bed with anything?
Oh, no, left it wide open.
Okay, because didn't you get as cold a winter as I did?
We got the coldest winter in probably 20-some years here, yes.
Did you have snow cover?
Yes.
Okay, good, because you could have harmed your asparagus bed by leaving it naked if you hadn't gotten that snow cover.
Good.
Freezing cold temperatures without snow cover can be deadly for perennial plants. But snow cover protects everything. It's always like 30 to 32 degrees underneath that insulating layer. Farmers used to call it God's mulch. This fall, save and shred some of your deciduous leaves. And after you take the fronds down in, let's say, December, then I would cover the bed with an inch or two of well-shredded leaves.
Okay.
Now, as to your fantasy as to the age of your plants, no. Good try, as I'm sure you've been told at other points in your life. But they are still babies. How many crowns did you plant?
Probably 12.
Okay, good. So here's the deal. You're absolutely correct, and you're supposed to leave them alone for 3 years. But the God's honest truth is no one does that. No one has that kind of self-control. So this spring, let a couple of shoots emerge, and you have my permission to taste a few, if.
A few.
A few, if. If they are wider than a pencil.
Okay.
If they are decent-looking asparagus shoots that come up, and they're much thicker than a pencil, you can harvest, and I mean a few, like no more than 5% of what comes up. Just a few. You're just going to get a taste. Just, you know, you're going to have the butter melted. It's going to be glorious. But don't do it if the shoots are no thicker than a pencil. Did you use composted horse manure or anything to feed them?
You know what? I put some coffee grounds on them. I mean, when we planted them, we used this topsoil that had a mushroom composite, I believe, in it or something like that. And then I put some coffee grounds on them probably 2 months ago, just on top of them. But I did hear your show a couple weeks ago where I might not have wanted to do that and composted that with some eggshells and some shredded leaves. So I won't do that anymore.
Right. Shredded leaves and coffee grounds make excellent compost. But your asparagus is a very heavy feeder of nitrogen. This is one of the few uses for well-composted horse manure. So if you can get horse manure that's finished, that means it's not hot. It doesn't have any objectionable smell. It looks like rich black soil. That's the perfect fertilizer for your asparagus bed, and it should be fed every year. Asparagus is a very heavy feeder of nitrogen. So if you do have skinny shoots coming up this year, you have to resist the temptation, but make sure you feed them, and then the following year, you'll get bigger shoots. Or you can go out and get corn gluten meal, which will not only feed the plants perfectly with nitrogen, but prevent the germination of any weed seeds in the bed.
I like that. Okay. When should I put the corn gluten on there? What time of year?
Because it sounds like there was nothing done to prevent weeds and stuff, I would do that in the spring as soon as the soil warms up.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, Mike. And remember, this is planting for the future. Asparagus pays off in years like 4 to 45. It's not immediate gratification.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there.
Hello, Karen. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
I am doing very well. Thank you for asking. Where is Karen good?
I'm calling from Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Not far from Philly. Okay, what can we do for Karen in Doylestown?
Well, I have two cherry laurels that were planted a couple of years ago in my front yard, and the backside of one of them, just the backside, completely died. So my landscaper replaced them from a different nursery, and the same thing happened again. Just the one bush is not vibrant, and the one is, the other is not, and just the backside of it dies.
And they are typically pretty hardy plants. Now, is it growing in or near a lawn?
It is on a lawn. There's no grass. There is a Zelkova tree. There's no grass on that front lawn at all. There's just ground cover.
Oh, okay. Okay. What kind of ground cover?
The Sweet William.
Oh, okay. So that's not fed. I mean, you don't have that area treated or anything.
No, I don't. The other things that are growing there, there's a few hosta. It's a shaded area. So there's, and those things are growing fine, but not as quickly as they should. They're slow growers compared to, at least that's what my gardener tells me. They should be filling in more.
Okay. Is this area mulched? Does your landscaper put down mulch?
Yes.
And is it wood mulch?
It is wood mulch, yes.
Have you considered not doing that?
Yes, we have done both. We have left the mulch off and we have added mulch.
Okay. The thing that worries me or makes me wonder what's going on is the fact that one shrub is doing very well and the other keeps dying.
And just the back side of it.
And is that the side that faces the house?
It is.
And that's the side that gets the least sun.
Correct.
Is it possible that the other shrub is getting a significant amount more sun and that no sun is hitting this one in its location ever?
No, they're side by side and they get equal sunshade.
Have you considered swapping them, moving the healthy one over to where the...
No, having replaced them from a different nursery, I didn't consider that, but it's certainly worth a try.
The first thing I'll suggest is that wood mulch does stunt the growth of all plants. It's unnatural. The only reason it's being foisted on homeowners is they can't put it in landfills anymore. And a lot of times the stuff that's ground up has construction debris, treated wood in it. Even freshly shredded tree limbs are not good for other plants because they're absorbing nitrogen until they can become soil. So The first thing I would recommend is try to convince your landscaper to get rid of the wood mulch and actually put down yard waste compost this year. I can't guarantee what it'll do for the laurel, but I can guarantee you your other plants are going to perk up and hit their true growing speed. Hostas should never be stunted. That's a sign that the wood chips are stealing all the nitrogen from the environment. And then my other stupid idea, how big is the good cherry laurel? How tall is it?
Oh, about 2 feet high, maybe 2 feet in diameter.
Okay. Are these things pruned? When are you pruning them, or when are you having them pruned?
In the spring, they've been pruned.
Okay, that's perfectly all right. The first thing I'm going to suggest is that a mulch of compost instead of wood chips may stop this. It may give the new cherry laurel everything it needs to thrive. But the old researcher in me would say move them, would say put the really good one in the spot that has bad luck and put the other one in the other spot and see what happens. It'll show you that there's something wrong with that location that needs to be investigated.
I will do that. Thank you so much for your advice.
All right. Good luck. I wish I had better ideas. You have a real quandary there.
Yes, I'll let you know how I make out.
Please do. Please do. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and thank everybody out there for your astounding response to the video of my TEDx talk on composting. It just surpassed 100,000 views on YouTube back at the beginning of March, and it shows no sign of slowing down. But don't go looking for the link that'll take you to a talk that tells you everything you need to know to be a composting champ at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how you can help protect monarch butterflies. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden. Burpee can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, the great migration of monarch butterflies across North America is gravely endangered by genetically engineered crops and habitat loss. But there are a couple of things that you can do to help these butterflies continue to make their great migration. We'll tell you all about it after lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
And where is Jeff doing well?
Jeff's doing well in Pittman, New Jersey.
Pittman, New Jersey. All right. What can we do for Jeff in the Garden State?
Okay, well, I just want to let you know that there's a new seed library at the McCowan Memorial Library here in Pittman, New Jersey.
You mean there is a traditional library that is lending out seeds?
Yes, that is correct. That is correct. It's a new concept that is gaining a lot of traction in the last year, and we opened our first one here in Pittman February 22nd.
Really? That's wild. I've not heard of lending libraries for seeds. I know about all the vast seed repositories and, you know, safes and, you know, seed holdings and freezers. But I've not heard of you being able to go into a library and check out seeds. So where did your seeds come from for this year?
I've sought out some really trusted seed sources, and there's a couple really good seed companies that are working to preserve historical varieties of seeds, and one of them is called Victory Seeds, and they're in Oregon. And then there's tomatofest.com, which deals specifically with heirloom tomato seeds, and they're certified organic, and they're in Carmel, California, I believe.
Right.
And then there's rareseeds.com, which is the website for Baker Creek heirloom seeds. And Baker Creek is the seed company that's at the forefront of raising awareness about heirloom seeds and bringing them into the forefront. They're a great company. They sponsor events, and they have a great website. And they're very dedicated to what they do.
Oh, they have the most amazing catalog being published right now, certainly one of the most. Now, did these folks all contribute seeds to you?
No. Actually, what happens with this is, from the research that I found, there are seed companies that will donate seeds to seed libraries like this and other school gardens and things and just community gardens and things like that. What I found is that they tend to donate the seeds that were left over from the year before, and you don't get to choose the seeds that you get. And that's great. I'm not criticizing them for that. But there were some very specific types of seeds that I was looking for, so I bought the seeds and I donated them to the library.
Now, what's your relationship with the library? Are you just a patron?
Yes. Well, I'm just a patron. Sharon Ferguson is the director of the library here in Pittman. She's great. She's always looking for new and innovative ways to use the library as a community center. She's always looking for ways to bring people in and to build a community. And when I approached her about the seed library, she didn't hesitate. She thought it was great. She gardens. She gets the idea that keeping open and free access to seeds is a wonderful idea. And she's really excited about the prospect of building a seed-saving community through her library. So,
do you expect that people who take these seeds home are going to grow them out and then bring you saved seeds of the same open-pollinated varieties for the following year?
Correct. That's how these programs are structured. That's what our hope is. If the seeds don't make it back, the seeds don't make it back. There's no fines for people who don't return the seeds, because if you garden, you know that there are so many variables that you can't control. The seeds may not germinate. It may be really bad weather-wise, or blights or bugs or anything of that nature. But we hope that people will do this. And at the opening this past Saturday, people were very excited about this. The response was great. As of Tuesday, the 26th, we had 100 packages of seeds checked out.
So you're giving people whole packs with like 30, 50, 100 seeds in them?
Oh, no. Actually, let me clarify that. What we do is we get the packages of seeds and we break them down into seed packages of maybe 5 to 10 seeds per package.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yes, it does. What we hope to do is we hope to introduce people to gardening, introduce people to heirlooms and organic gardening, and introduce people to seed saving, and encourage them to take the initiative and seek out good seed sources for themselves, and then start trading seeds amongst themselves, doing seed swaps.
So in reality, some of these people are not going to be good seed starters right away. You know, they're not going to read the directions. They're just going to do the sunny windowsill in the old yogurt cups.
Correct.
I guess that's like giving a book to somebody who might not understand it. They still have the right to read it, right?
That's exactly correct.
And do you hope that this library, after your initial push, is going to somehow build itself? You know, that people are going to not only bring back your varieties that have been grown out locally, once they've shown themselves to be trustworthy, would you accept their homegrown varieties that maybe you didn't begin them with?
Well, that's the bridge that I'll cross when I get there. I want to talk to the people that are bringing in seeds, and I want to find out exactly what their process was to see exactly what they did. Concerns have been expressed to me from various people about the rigorous controls that would be on this program, because you don't know what people are doing when they're gardening. And there's the not so much with self-pollinators like tomatoes, but for anything that's wind or insect pollinators.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're not going to be taking back squash seeds or corn seed from somebody. It's just too – you got to be a pro from Dover to save those seeds successfully and get the same variety. So is this program available only to people in New Jersey, only to people within the region of this library?
To participate in the seed library at the McAllen Library, what you need is a library card from a local library in New Jersey. The way I understand it, the libraries have a consortium that they group together, and people can log in and they can check out books from various branches within the county and a couple branches outside of the county. So as long as you have a library card that works within the library system, you can participate in this.
Very good. And how long do you think your original set of seeds is going to hold out?
Oh, I think that they'll be done by the end of this week. So I'm going to be restocking for the next 2 to 3 Saturdays. I'll be restocking the library and encouraging people to come in and get as many seeds as they want. We don't put a limit on how many packages of seeds that they can check out.
And you just ask them to be realistic about it.
Yes.
Once again, what library is this? Where is it located? And what can people do to get more information?
It is the McAllen Memorial Library. It's on Holly Avenue in Pittman, New Jersey. And Pittman, New Jersey is a small town in Gloucester County that's right off of Route 55. If they want more information about the seed library at McAllen, they could contact McAllen directly, and they'll give you the information that you need to know.
All right. Very good, because they should call before they come in to make sure there's seeds around that day.
Yes, I would recommend that, because this response was heartwarming. It was great.
All right. Well, we want to hear – this is an amazing idea. I love this idea. And hopefully, by being on the show, you'll trigger people to think about this nationally. Give us a call back at the end of the season when
sure.
when the return seeds start coming back in and you start collecting late fees. No, you said you weren't going to do that.
No.
And let us know how the program worked.
Okay, it is available. There are libraries all across the country now. So. There are, I think, actually close to 200 of them. I think it's getting close to that number of 200 all across the country.
Well, thank you for bringing it to New Jersey.
Oh, you're welcome. There's actually two other ones in New Jersey. This one is the first one in South Jersey.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Good work, Jeff. And I wish you great success with it. And call us back in the fall. Let us know how it worked.
Sure, I would love to. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Take care, man.
Okay, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Terry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Terry. How are you?
I'm good.
And where is Terry good?
I'm calling from Dayton, Ohio.
Okay, and what can we do for Terry in Dayton?
I live in a neighborhood that's near sort of a blighted urban area. It's called the Dixie Strip in Dayton. And a couple of old buildings have been torn down, and they needed to be torn down. They were really old and decrepit, and lots of bad things were going on in them. And it was torn down by a company out of Louisville, and they've razed it to the ground, and now they're planning to sell it later for commercial use. But for right now, there's a big, ugly, empty lot that doesn't have any grass, doesn't have any plants. And what I'm wondering is, you know, I did some research to find out what kind of wildflowers we could plant in that area. And I wanted to send a letter to the company first to ask them if they would do it. And then if I can't get a hold of them or they're not willing to do it, I was wondering, can I maybe just plant some wildflowers there myself to fill in that lot until they build something on it, which I suspect will be a few years.
Right. Okay, so these are great opportunities, these torn down buildings that aren't going to be replaced right away. They're a poor spot for a community garden because obviously the land is going to be reused pretty soon. But they're a great temporary spot. Now, were you in the Philadelphia area, I would have you contact the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, which has programs to temporarily reclaim lots like this for short and long-term use. Do you have a horticultural society? I should know this. You know, Dayton is one of our biggest stations, or I should say Yellow Springs, Ohio, right? WYSO. And are there horticultural societies in the area that do this kind of work? Have you seen any community gardens spring up? Have you seen anybody do plantings down medial strips of roadways and anything like that?
Not of this nature, but I can definitely do some investigation to see if I can find out if I'm sure there's a horticultural society, and we have the metro parks, which are great.
And
so
what
maybe
are the,
I could contact the...
What are the metro parks?
There's the Five Rivers Metro Parks, and they have a lot of gardening programs. And, you know, they even have, you know, they have organic gardening programs. They have a wildflower sort of rescue program out at Cox Arboretum. So maybe I could contact them and see if they have any ideas.
Those sound like great resources, because those are the people you would have called that if there was some special flowers growing around these old buildings. Right? They would have come and rescued
right.
them. So I can't figure out. I mean, there's like eight things you should do first. So you should definitely contact these Metro Park people. You should talk to your local county extension agent to see what kind of work is being done here. But here's an idea that just popped into my head. Maybe utilizing the resources of these people who've already built gardens and your state extension service, which may provide these kind of services, you might be able to approach the people who tore down the buildings who own the properties now with like a nice artist model sketch, a landscape sketch of what the unused land would look like in obviously temporary but very pretty plantings. And your pitch would be, what do you want potential buyers to come see? Do you want them to come see a rubble-strewn lot? Or do you want them to see something that the community kind of landscaped for you that we realize isn't going to be permanent and isn't going to be there forever, but in the meantime could be a great source of joy, bring pollinators and butterflies into the city? And in the typical homeowner situation, that kind of landscape can increase the value of a property by 10, 20, even 30%. They might be very receptive to temporarily improving the profitability of the future of these lots.
Well, that's a good idea. If they were going to do that, one of the things I was really concerned about is just the state of the ground, because it's really just gravelly dirt with chunks of asphalt in it. And I wondered, I mean, I have an idea of what wildflowers grow in Ohio, but I don't know if they can grow in those conditions.
Typically, what grows in these things are what we call the wild urban plants of the Northeast. And there is a great book, Peter Del Tradicio, and I think it's called The Wild Urban Plants of the Northeast. Now, a lot of these plants are on invasive species lists, but a lot of them are not. And a lot of them provide a lot of benefit for wildlife and a rainwater control and things like that. That could be a good starting point. But very important, if these were old buildings from like the 40s, 50s, 60s, and they were torn down and most of the rubble was just hauled away, don't have anybody going in there gardening, because there's probably lead in the soil. There's probably all sorts of contaminants in the soil. So anybody who goes in there to plant anything, They have to be protected. They have to be wearing at least dust masks and wear gloves at all time so they don't inhale any lead dust or touch anything that's wrong or something like that. So if the company doesn't go for it, then I guess in the back of your head you're thinking about seed bombing the place, right? Making these impregnating wads of dirt with seeds and just happening to walk by several times a day for a couple of weeks, tossing these mud balls in right before rain. And even that would be better than nothing. And my advice for you would be to pack those things with seeds that can get through drought, that can get through wet periods, and that are going to attract pollinators and butterflies. Throw some milkweed in there.
Okay.
But see if you might not be able to turn this into a model that other cities can imitate. All it takes is somebody like you to be at the center of it, to get these people working together. And, you know, the momentum you got on your side, I mean, it seems to me a slam dunk. The properties would be much more attractive to buyers if they had pretty plants growing on them.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it would certainly be much more attractive to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Driving by there.
And everybody. It would be a gift to the city. So start making some calls, see if you can do some good work, and I wish you luck, and I know all our listeners do right now as well.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, well, thank you, Terry, and I hope this comes to fruition.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear on March 22nd and 23rd at the Fredericksburg, Virginia Home and Garden Show, on Saturday, March 29th at the Severna Park Home Show in Severna Park, Maryland, and on Sunday, March 30th at the Harford County Home Show in Bel Air, Maryland. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how you can establish way stations that just might save the great migration of monarch butterflies. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Verpee supports You Bet Your Garden. Verpee can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at verpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to a very important question of the week, explaining why the great migration of monarch butterflies has become so endangered, why sightings of these butterflies have become so rare, and what you can do in your own landscape to help try and reverse this troubling trend. It's coming up after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Dan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. Where's Dan doing pretty well?
I live just outside of Milford, New Jersey.
And remind me where Milford is.
It's western central New Jersey, a small town along the Delaware.
Oh, okay. That's a really nice area there across the water from the New Hope area in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. What can we do for Dan in a beautiful part of the Garden State?
Well, we have about 10 acres, and we'd had horses that we kept on the property. And we're kind of aging out of that activity.
Right.
And I have 6 acres of, you know, level pasture, and I'm kind of wondering what to do with it. I don't really want to plant Christmas trees. That seems to be a lot of people who do that. And I was wondering if there might be something that I could possibly make a little money at, you know, have as a hobby and keep busy and keep outside.
Well, the thing about establishing a Christmas tree farm is that obviously, you know, you're not selling anything for the first 5 to 7 years.
Right.
And really, all of the expense is largely in pruning, which is something you do all summer long, but not heavy pruning. Just, you know, no tree grows naturally in that shape. So you're out there with really hand pruners, and you're really just doing the same kind of pruning, you know, they do to make topiaries. So it's light work in the summertime. But it's a nice use of the land, especially if you're going to pass the land on down to the next generation. If you're talking about selling for market, is that anything you've ever done?
No, it's not.
Years ago, and I think we have a question of the week up at our website. If you go to youbetyourgarden.org and you go to Garden Answers A to Z, there's a little treatise on being a small farmer. And the important thing about being a small farmer is that you're growing something you can handle and something that you have a market for. The basic rule of thumb in farming is one man, so to speak, one person can handle 1 acre over the course of a growing season. But an acre can be hugely productive. An acre can be enough to sustain a very clever small farmer who knows what they're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, two things that come to mind are both small fruits. Raspberries are a very high-value crop. They would be great for the kind of land you describe, because they need to spread. They need a lot of room to spread out laterally. As the years go by, they greatly increase the number of canes without you doing anything. And the real work with raspberries is in the harvesting.
Okay.
So it depends on how you are with people. You could do a pick-your-own kind of thing where you would just mow big lanes that people could walk down, and they could pick the raspberries themselves and then pay you as they left. Or if you think you're really good with people and you want to do the picking yourself, or you want to hire people, I mean, there's a ton of farmers markets in your area. You wouldn't have to go far. But when you sell at a farmers market, you really have to have personality. You know, you really got to be able to interact with the people, talk about how you grew it, what you used or didn't use. But there's nobody who doesn't like raspberries in season, and they do pretty much grow themselves. Okay. The other alternative would be blueberries. Raspberries would produce their first harvestable crops, money-making crops, much quicker. Blueberries, over a period of time, can produce an enormous amount on each plant, but you have to keep the birds away. The birds will fight you for every berry. So if that's what you're doing, in addition to acidifying the soil and picking the right blueberry varieties, and blueberries grow great in your area, I would actually enclose the area in some kind of netting to begin with, because otherwise it's a fight that the birds always win.
I see.
Other crops like tomatoes and peppers and salad greens and stuff, man, that is a ton of work. That's that's like 14-hour days every day. And I would even suggest you intern on a small organic farm before you did anything like that. Whereby if you do these small fruits and you do the work up front to make them really accessible, you can have people come in to do the harvesting, which, again, is the hardest work. Mm-hmm. You know, growing this stuff is easy. Harvesting is hard. But people love pick-your-own places. And, again, you know, as long as you protect those blueberries from birds, keep the soil nice and acidic, that would be a very high-value crop that would start to pay you back in, like, 3 or 4 years. The raspberries in 2 years. Or if you don't want people tramping all over your land or you just want them to come for, like, a month and be jolly and everything, I like the idea of a Christmas tree farm.
Okay, okay.
And then you could have more acreage. You could handle much more than 1 acre if you're growing trees and you maybe hire the occasional kid to come in and do some of the pruning that you would be doing every 2 weeks.
Okay, well, Mike, you've given me some worthwhile options.
All right, Dan. Well, good luck. It's a great area to grow in, and just figure out what you want and do it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thanks. Take care.
1-888-346-9499. Scott, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Good afternoon, Mike. I'm calling you from Rosholt, Wisconsin, up here where we still have 3 feet of snow on the ground, and the temperature was zero this morning.
Oh, okay. Well, I still have a significant amount of snow on the ground, Scott. Luckily, our temperature hasn't been zero lately, but we hit it this year.
Mike, the reason I'm calling is this year I'm putting in a blackberry patch, and I've been reading up on them, and they suggest a certain pH. I was wondering, are any of the pH test kits on the market reliable? I noticed they have some that have probes, some that have different vials that you mix stuff. Are any of them reliable?
I don't have a lot of experience with them. I've heard good things about probes, bad things about probes. With pH, though, it is pretty simple. I mean, it is, you know, the pH scale is pretty standard, with 7 being neutral. And what are the, I presume you asked your state extension service what blackberries require?
Well, I've been doing a little research on the plants, and the blackberries that I've been searching out is a primo cane, and they're saying between 5.5 and 6.
That seems a little low. I never thought of blackberries as acid-loving plants. You don't mean blueberries. Well, no, primo is a blackberry plant, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know that the soil needs to be that low, but typically in Wisconsin, which is a northern area with a lot of rain, I would think that that would be the typical range of your soil. What kind of plants grow well naturally?
I grow a lot of grapes. I have a vineyard. Everything does really well. I don't touch anything. Concords, Edelweiss, Marquettes, Fredonias, they all do. The grapes do fine. I don't do anything to the soil.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, you know, normally you wouldn't. Grapes, as you probably know, like blackberries, are a very low nutrition crop. You don't want to feed them, or you're just going to encourage disease and pest problems. And this is what farmers would do. They would look at what plants are doing well in their landscape. If they're azaleas and their rhododendrons are kicking butt, but the lawn doesn't look very good, that would be a sign that your soil is fairly highly acidic and not the closer to neutral. But if your grapes are doing well, the pH range for growing grapes is fairly identical to blackberries. So if you're really curious about it, Wisconsin has a nice state extension system. I'm sure for about $8, you could send in a soil sample and they would give you a definitive pH value. And then that would give you your reference point. Then you could go out to a garden center or nursery and try out test strips and different things like that. You know, maybe buy a returnable pH meter and see what matches the professional soil lab's results. Because again, you live in a state that should have subsidized soil testing. And I don't think it would cost you more than $8 or $10 to get that first really definitive reading. But in a nice, normal organic landscape where the only fertilizer you're adding is compost, research has shown that the plants aren't as pH sensitive as in landscapes where a lot of chemicals are used. There's something about just amending the soil with organic matter that allows you to grow a wider range of plants no matter what the technical pH is. So if you're going to feed these things anything to get them started in the beginning, just a nice layer of compost, it sounds to me like your soil is already right at the right pH, and then the compost would be a little bit of insurance.
I've noticed on your garden questions A to Z, you do not have a lot on blackberries. Do I just follow the raspberry guidelines? Are they pretty much the same plant?
Absolutely. And, you know, don't feed them. Don't mollycoddle them. Give them your worst soil, and they'll produce the best.
Thank you, Mike, for your wealth of knowledge.
All right. Well, thank you, Scott. What a nice thing to say. Good luck, sir.
You have a nice day. Bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, how you can help save the monarchs. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read us this week's intriguing question.
Sure, Mike. Gracie in Chowella, Washington writes, I recently heard a Kansas State University professor from monarchwatch.org explain that no monarchs showed for their festival in Canada this year. One major reason he cited was the eradication of milkweed plants on farms that grow genetically engineered crops. And so he is proposing that homeowners establish milkweed weigh stations in their gardens. I certainly plan to grow a lot of milkweed this year. Mike, are monarchs really on the decline that severely? And how do genetically engineered crop plants affect them?
Well, the problem is actually much worse than I originally thought, with some scientists speculating that the migration of monarchs across North America may become extinct within our lifetime. One reason is that illegal logging in Mexico has reduced the amount of land they use for their winter home down to a small fraction of what it was. That's why there's online petitions that people can sign urging intense protection for the remaining stands of trees.
And genetically engineered crops?
Well, although science promised us that these crops were going to reduce pesticide use, the opposite has turned out to be true. The most popular genetically engineered crops are the so-called Roundup Ready corn and soybeans from Monsanto. A staggering 90% of the corn and soybeans grown in the U.S. are Roundup Ready, a genetic tinkering that allows farmers to saturate their fields with massive amounts of this potent herbicide at levels that would cause, quote, normal corn and soybean plants to wither up and die. Milkweed is only one of the many wild plants that have suffered collateral damage from this practice, but it's the crucial plant for monarch survival.
And milkweed does exactly what for monarch butterflies?
It feeds their babies. It's their nursery, daycare center, and cafeteria all rolled up into one. When adult monarchs migrate up from Mexico, they're looking for milkweed plants to lay their eggs on. When those eggs hatch, the baby caterpillars feed on the plant. It is the only host plant for these very special caterpillars.
Okay, so the hope is that home gardeners can replace the milkweed lost to Roundup?
Sure sounds like a good idea to me. As we've explained in previous questions of the week, there are several different types of milkweed that home gardeners can easily grow, from the basic butterfly weed to the swamp milkweed that can handle wet soils. But longtime butterfly breeder and monarch champion Rick McCullough is among many experts urging people not to grow the more exotic tropical varieties anymore. There's a risk that they're harboring a disease that's deadly to monarchs, and they might interfere with the migratory instinct. So just plant milkweeds that are native, that the monarchs recognize as belonging here.
We also heard from Margaret, who lives near Quincy, Illinois, and listens to us on WQUB. She writes, I have several milkweed plants come up as volunteers in my flower bed every year, and I'm happy to leave them for the monarchs, up to a point. They get very large and crowd out the other plants. Can I pull them after they have served as lunch for the baby monarchs? Or do the caterpillars also make their chrysalises on milkweed? If so, I would obviously need to postpone pulling them even longer. Thank you for your advice.
Well, the caterpillars need those plants to stay in place until the end of the season, when the caterpillars will emerge as adults, feed heavily on pollen and nectar plants, and then fly back to Mexico, hoping there's still some trees left for them to live in when they get there. So either leave that milkweed in place all season or maybe transplant it early in the season to a less crowded area of the landscape.
Are there any garden locations that would be better than others?
Absolutely. As both Rick McCoola and fellow butterfly enthusiast Ron Ryle have stressed, place your milkweed as far away from birds as possible. Don't grow milkweed or the pollen and nectar plants that the adults crave, like Mexican sunflower, near bird baths, feeders, or nesting boxes. Birds are one of the biggest predators of both the adult and caterpillar stage.
And is Mexican sunflower...
whose scientific name is Tithonia?
Wait a minute. How did Mr. I-don't-know-Latin-names remember that one?
Oh, it's easy. You know Shirley Ellis's The Name Game song? You just play that with Shakespeare's Fairy Queen from Midsummer Night's Dream. Works every time. At least it does if you're dyslexic. Now, you were going to ask me if Tithonia...
Mexican sunflower...
is the only pollen and nectar plant that the adults look for, and no, it's not. The organization Monarch Watch also lists coneflower, Echinacea is the flower of the year for 2014, by the way, as well as red sage, which also attracts hummingbirds.
Who don't eat butterflies.
Now, one can only hope. Also, Joe Pye weed, zinnias...
and Tithonia?
On the list. So grow some Tithonia and fuel the adults for their long trip down south.
Or Mexican sunflower.
Right, whichever one you can find first. Well, that sure was a hopeful look at what we can do to try and save the magnificent monarch migration now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to lots more information, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to maul my milkweed if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email and your tired report, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. As always, we plead,
please, please, please tell us where you live when you email us. Please, please, please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org. where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminators. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and see what's new every day at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Banks. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Hey, I wonder what our production assistant, Marissa Nicosia, would sound like if we put her into the name game. Oh, well. I'm Mike. Mike, Mike, Po Mike, Banana Mana, Fo Fike, Fee Fi, Fo Fike, Mike. And I'll see you next week. What kind of plants would work best for those whose sight is impaired? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss plants whose scent, feel, and sound provide the most delight. Plus your fabulous phone calls.